Hello and welcome to episode 9 of our Understanding Corporate Law podcast series. My name is David Pritchard, Head of Marketing here at Sintons, joined again today by my colleague Sophie Towns, who is a solicitor in the corporate team here at Sintons. And our podcast today, which will last approximately 10 to 15 minutes, is going to concentrate on growth shares. So without any further ado, straight over to Sophie. Sophie, good morning and over to you.
Thanks, David. This podcast is all about growth shares. We are going to cover what they are, how they work, advantages and disadvantages, and key considerations. So just to start with the basics then, and an introduction to growth shares. Growth shares are a special class of shares typically created by private, unlisted companies. The premise behind growth shares is to reward the participants for the growth in value of the company above a certain threshold. They are therefore often used to incentivize key employees and can be used in conjunction with or as an alternative to EMI share options. One of the salient features of growth shares is that they are generally tax efficient, as the recipient should not face an income tax charge on the issue of the shares and will only be liable to capital gains tax on the gain. They can therefore be more appealing than other share scheme alternatives. Growth shares can be created even if the intended recipient is not an employee. For example, growth shares may be recommended for specific family tax planning reasons. In these scenarios, it is common to see children receiving growth shares in a family investment company. There are two underlying principles of growth shares. The first is to protect the value of the existing shares in the company, and the second is to allow the holders of the growth shares to participate in the future growth of the company. So how do growth shares typically work? In the simplest of terms, growth shares involve the allotment of a new special class of share which benefit only from the increase in value of a company above a certain threshold. The threshold often represents the value of the company, but it may also represent a figure which exceeds the value of the company, which creates a hurdle. So by way of example, we might have a company which is worth £1 million and has ordinary shares in issue. To create the growth shares, we would then allot a new class of share, A ordinary shares, which would have specific share rights that differ from the existing ordinary shares. We would usually want to restrict the rights of the A ordinary shares so that they only have a right to capital over and above the £1 million target. This means that on day one, the growth shares are relatively valueless and their value will only increase as the value of the business exceeds the £1 million target. This in turn ring fences the value of the existing ordinary shares as they have an exclusive right to a share in the existing value of the company. The rights of the new growth share class will be specified in the company's articles of association. These rights will vary, but typically they will cover the following areas. The capital entitlement of growth shares. So where a growth share structure is in place, the usual position is that the existing shareholders of the company will have an exclusive right to a share of the value of the company up to the target or hurdle. Any value over and above the target or hurdle will then be shared either between all the shareholders of the company or just the growth shareholders. The second right we often think about is the income entitlement of the growth shares. So whether growth shares will have a right to a dividend will largely depend upon the particular purpose of the growth share scheme, but typically the growth shares will have no right to a dividend. Next is voting rights. And again, whether growth shares will have a right to vote will largely depend upon the circumstances in question, but the usual position is that they are non-voting shares. And then preemption rights, compulsory transfer provisions, and then other rights such as preemption rights or compulsory transfer provisions. So there are a host of other rights which may attach to the growth shares or which may be restricted so that the existing shareholders can preserve their control over the company. For example, there may be a need to retain control of which parties hold the growth shares, and therefore it might be desirable to implement preemption rights on share transfers or compulsory transfer provisions, which limits the growth shareholders' ability to transfer their shares to a third party. The articles of association and the rights which attach to the growth shares will need to be considered carefully and adapted to suit the needs of the company and the underlying purpose of the growth share scheme. Advantages and disadvantages. So the main advantages of growth share schemes are the shares are issued with a relatively low upfront investment because because of their low market value, and they will be much cheaper to buy than the existing shares in the company. There is no immediate dilution to the existing shares in the company, which means that the existing shareholders can take some comfort that the introduction of the growth shares will not dilute their shares. It can be a useful tool to incentivize key employees and can also be used for recruitment purposes in order to attract the best talent. This is particularly true for those companies which might be up and coming and do not have the ability to attract talent by paying large salaries or bonuses. They are tax efficient and can be used where EMI options may not be available. They are generally flexible, and the rights which attach to the shares can be tailored specifically to suit the needs of the company and the underlying purpose, and they can be used as part of a family tax planning strategy. The disadvantages of growth share schemes are the tax advantages are only available where the growth share scheme has been structured correctly and is subject to any future change in tax legislation. They are usually best suited to private limited companies, and they are only effective if there is a reasonable prospect of future growth in the value of the company, and the time frame for growth will need to be fairly reasonable to successfully incentivize employees. So main things to consider when introducing a growth share scheme. So tax planning and advice, we would always recommend that you speak to a tax advisor who can provide you with advice as to the tax advantages and disadvantages of introducing a growth share scheme. The growth share scheme needs to be structured carefully as to exclude any unwanted income tax liabilities. This is something that falls outside the scope of this podcast and most legal practitioners' scope of work. Prospects of growth. So as already mentioned, a growth share scheme will only be worthwhile where there is a realistic prospect of growth in the company. The whole purpose of growth shares is underpinned by future growth of the company, and where growth is uncertain, then a growth share scheme may not be the right option for the company. Valuation. In order to implement the growth share scheme, then you will need to understand the value of the company as at the point the growth shares are introduced. The proposed figure for the target capital value or hurdle will need to be carefully considered with reference to the overall value of the company. And finally, legal advice. You will need a specialist lawyer who can prepare the necessary paperwork, including amending the company's articles of association to implement the growth share scheme and to allot the growth shares. So that wraps up today's podcast, which I hope you found interesting. As ever, thanks for listening. And David will go through my details at the end, should you wish to discuss anything covered in this podcast or any of the other podcasts in our corporate series.
Thanks, Sophie. Very quickly for me, we release our webinars, podcasts and blogs on a regular basis, all of which can be found on our website at www.sintons.co.uk should you wish to take a look. And that includes all episodes of our Understanding Corporate Law podcast series. And you can also follow the team on Twitter at SintonsCoCo, which is at SintonsCoCo. If you'd like to discuss anything Sophie's raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with her or a member of the team. Sophie can be contacted via telephone 0191 226 7878 or via email sophie.towns@sintons.co.uk. Episode 10 will be with you in approximately 3 weeks' time. Thank you once again for the amount of people that are tuning into this podcast series. We've had some absolutely outstanding views, some great questions sent in, which we are trying to answer as part of the series, and we will be tailoring future episodes to your questions. We also really do appreciate all your positive comments, and we're just very pleased that this series continues to add value to you. So on that note, thank you once again from Sophie and I. Stay safe, everyone, and we'll speak to you next time. Thank you.